This conference will
is go back and review our prior week exercises, because again, last week was the third week we've been spending in this book, Strategic Acceleration, Succeed at the Speed of Life, which is a book by Tony Jerry. And we understand that it's based on opening premise of clarity, focus, execution, three most crucial parts of a pedestal that stands up, or what we should call a stool that stands up. We need all of them in order to really be effective, and they build on each other. So it's absolutely crucial to start with clarity. That's why we went through those exercises first. In fact, we spent 2 weeks on clarity alone, because it's hard sometimes to get clear because we've spent so many years muddying the water for ourselves, and those are some of the toughest exercises. In fact, I'll suggest to you that maybe you want to go over those with some of your friends or downline members. I'm doing some of that right now, doing some coaching around them, because it's amazing just on that belief scale how people take different viewpoints because we have different definitions of words. Isn't that amazing? And we wonder why people miscommunicate at times. Well, if we're defining words differently, imagine what happens in communication. Absolutely. So anyway, so clarity is critical. Focus is absolutely critical. And that's what we worked on last week. And so we're going to talk about those exercises. And then today we're going to get into execution. But let's first review the exercises around focus. And as we knew last week, when you talk about focus, what's the number one thing that takes you out of focus is distractions. So one of the things, exercise 10, that Tony had us do, sorry, getting a little liquid in me, is to evaluate our current focus skills. And that was an intriguing for a week. We got to, because we did, although the exercise is a two-week journal, I hope you continue doing that. Although, you might want to try to experiment with something like this the first 2 weeks of January as well, but it's important to do it now just to get a heads up and to see, you know, it's called awareness. Because what's the first step to any voluntary change? Awareness. So, last week, and I, you know, sorry, there was a typo in the outline, too. If you got your exercise, the last sentence in the direction on the top, it says, what is goal in your life? It should be going on in your life. What is going on in your life each day? You could have figured that out. I figured it out when I read through it. What is going on in your life each day concerning focus? And you put down your priorities, because every day you should start off with what are your priorities, whether it's a to-do list, what you want to accomplish in that day. Today's tasks is more of that to-do list. Priorities are, is Manatech a priority for me? What's a priority for me? Today's tasks, what tasks am I committed to accomplishing today, specific tasks? And then activity and distraction log, which is really the time. You just keep track of everything that happens to your day and you know, each minute by minute, you know. So at 8:00, 8:13, 8:15, 8:20, 8:30, 8:40, 9:00, whatever happens, phone calls, whatever's going on in my life, you keep track of it. You just keep a record. So the log is pretty lengthy. And I did that for a few days this past week, and it was amazing to me. Well, probably one of the distractions, which is why I say you could try this after the New Year's as well, one of our distractions was Christmas, because I had family coming in on Friday night, Saturday, because one group of my grandkids wants Christmas at home, and they live out of town, so they came up a week early to have Christmas with us, which is always a blessing. But it takes a lot, you know, and there's a lot of preparatory work for all of that, because it's like I have Christmas twice at my house. I cook and bake two major meals twice in the same 2 week period, or it's like a 10 day period. So anyway, so it was fun. We had a blast, but Christmas took a lot of, you know. Another thing that was really important, where it really came out to me, was how much time I spend in sports. You know, I love sports, but I spend a lot of time, and sometimes I do that during the day, and I can do that at night in free time, but I'm ending up, it's actually impacting some of the things I'm doing with regard. I'm getting a little static in the background. I don't know what happened. Let me try to mute again. There, I just tried. Nope, still there. It's got to be my phone problem. Okay, so anyway, so the Christmas became a thing. Sports became an obvious thing to me, investing in stocks. I had a little, you know, health issue this week, and that kind of took me off and distracted me. Sometimes I take breaks, and I was laughing at myself because I was, like, thinking, where do I get these breaks from? And sometimes I get in the attitude I deserve it. I don't know if you guys do that, but it was kind of like a funny thing about, oh, I deserve to do this, or I have a right to do it. You know, I'm a network marketer. I have free time. And we use that as logic and hang on a second. She's changing. Trying to get rid of my raspiness. Okay, that's a little bit better, I guess. Okay, everybody still hear me? Good. Yep, looks like I'm on talk, so I should be on. So I had that down. Various other things in my life, some real estate transactions, contribution that I'm doing for other people that might be great things, but they're distractions from my priorities. And so I have to, instead of trying to justify everything because it was a good thing, I did a good deed, I need to look back and say, how are these distractions impacting my life? So that was a great exercise, and I'm going to suggest all of you do it. It's painful because what are you doing? You know, the best way for me to do it is a legal pad would just put the time slots down. Every time I change something, you know, whether I'm doing one thing, I don't necessarily have a record of what's scheduled in that time slot, but I just keep track of time. Every time I change, if I'm working on one thing and I shift to another, a phone call comes in, I shift to another, I go down to get a little snack, whatever it is, and you keep it on a legal pad because it's going to be massive, so it's not something you'll fit in that specific journal we sent out because that just gives you an example of how to get it started. But important to do that, so you start doing that. And then the second exercise, that's your first exercise. And why do we do that exercise? Because awareness is the first step to change. As we all know, that's number one. So if you're ever going to change or shift or do something different in your life, the first thing that's going to have to happen before you shift is you have to be aware of what you're already doing. And that's why it becomes such a big point for everybody, is that we want to make sure that we're aware of what's happening in our life so then we can make some choices for voluntary change. All right, the second step, exercise 11, was improve your focus skills. And that was an incredible thing to just get a reality check. How many minutes each day you lose to distractions? So you start aggregating all the different things that you're doing that are pulling away from your distractions. And it's amazing how much time really triggers in that direction. I mean, on some of my days, when I went back at them, it was like 15%, 20%, 25%. I mean, there was getting to be chunky time spots. I had one particularly bad day that was over 55%, 60%, but that captured me in some Christmas things. But it's still huge compared to what you have planned and what your priorities are, what you actually accomplish. So it's amazing how much this robs you of effectiveness. And I know it's a big issue for me, and I always thought I was pretty disciplined, but obviously somewhere in my life that discipline has kind of seeped away. And maybe it's because you get successful in network marketing and all of a sudden you feel that freedom. And it's not that I don't have the freedom to do what I want to do, but when you have priorities and you set goals for yourself and you set direction and you have a vision, you want to make sure that you're dedicating all your energy towards that. You don't want to get off course. And because off course means delay, it means, you're holding other people back, you're impacting other lives because you're not achieving what you plan to achieve. It's kind of like what I talked about the other day when I talked about a person who wanted to have some health clinic set up for children. And she said she was watching or listening to that Making the Switch DVD that many of you have. It's the thing that came out of ManaQuest, I think. Video Plus is making them, but it's Making the Shift DVD or CD, which is very good, and it talks about whether you're going to cross that rope across between two buildings. And most people wouldn't do it because it's too dangerous, but then you put a fire in the other building and your child is on top of the roof. Are you going to cross the rope now? You wouldn't even think twice about it. Well, that gets into that same concept behind this about distractions, and maybe you have the freedom in network marketing, but the idea is, is there a child on the top of that building? And I'm going to suggest no matter what your goal is, there's a child on top of that building. So when are we going to step into it and make it happen? The world's waiting for you to get that done. Somebody out there, and I'm not saying one, but literally hundreds, thousands of people, are dependent on you taking the action and accomplishing the vision that you have for yourself, because it's impacting lives every day that you procrastinate and don't do it. So important for us to see that instead of wallowing in our freedom. And it doesn't mean you're not free, because I think freedom allows you the choice to really make that difference, and that's what's so awesome about the freedom you have. So you want to look at your behavior and say, let's reduce distractions, focus more on high leverage activities, on time performance, and increase productivity. So the idea is that you want to be able to ask those tough questions of yourself in each and every instance. Why didn't I complete the work I prioritized to stay, and what happened that caused me not to complete them? And then move forward and improve our focus skills to get rid of distractions so you can see them clearly and know how to get around them. Exercise 12 was getting clear of, get clear the current conditions. You know, strategic positives are the strengths that all of us possess that allow us to succeed. So there are five different categories that he asked on that. And that was an interesting exercise because it was like, what gives me a competitive advantage? What has made me great? How do my customers and associates view me? What are the top three facts that determine my ability to win? And then the last one, what strategic opportunities exist that I should pursue? This is not something necessarily that you have to answer in one moment, but, you know, go back and look at it and try to put better answers in it, because the better and the more clarity you have on these answers, the greater the results are that you're going to be creating. And we want to all create the best possible results, right? I mean, that's our goal. We want the best possible results for everybody in our lives. And in order to do that, we need to revisit this and give it some time to percolate in our head and in our, because I think what strategic opportunities exist that I should pursue, I think those are endless. But it's just a matter of what makes sense to you in terms of that area. So you've got to look at what those are going to be. And then the next goes into strategic negatives. So you have strategic positives, and then you have strategic negatives. And those are the factors that most powerfully contribute to failure or less than satisfactory results. So you look at, evaluate complaints that you have I looked at it from associate perspective. What kind of complaints do I have from associates who work with me, associates in that I'm trying to help drive and build their businesses? What kind of complaints do I get feedback from them? And really try to isolate on those, and that's not always easy to see because we don't always see them. But, you know, if you don't see them, then maybe it's time to get some feedback, honest, open feedback, and just solicit that from some of the people you're working with. They'll be more than happy to support you in that because you come from a concept of, can you help me? Everybody's looking to help other people, so you start with that premise, and then you ask them for feedback, and people are willing to give feedback. And if you're not willing to give feedback when people ask you to do that, you got to start looking at yourself and say, what is it about me that I'm not willing to be honest and open and help somebody else? Because I make it about me, maybe they won't like me. Well, then it's all about you and not about really contributing to somebody else. I think sometimes we can be at our greatest level of contribution when we get ourselves out of our way, right? I mean, if we focus on us, we're never going to be great contributors. So important to move yourself out of the way and come from contribution. So you need to see it for yourself and then go out and solicit it from other people and approach it the same way. I really need some help. This is what I'm working on. Could you give me some insight that I wouldn't have without your contribution? Wow. You think somebody's not going to respond to that? Sure they will. The top three customer complaints, you can look at that. I kind of drafted some customer complaints from people that actually that I'm helping in the field, and then I looked at associate complaints, too. I went through both so I could see what they are, you know, complaints that they have in terms of their business. What do my competitors believe to be my strategic shortcomings? I've got to look at that. What are some of our strategic shortcomings? And I looked at Manatech, and I said, you know, some people are, you know, negative about the Texas AG still or something. Some people out there are saying, you know, there's no, you know, Manatech had these problems in the past, so how can they rebuild and you know, gain back their mojo? And I, you know, and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I love these because I love to respond to them. But that's I hear some of that out in the field, so I wrote some of those kind of things down. What are the top three factors that can cause me to lose? What do you think my top factor was that can cause me to lose? Top three factors that can cause me to lose. My own beliefs, right? My own self. The top three factors that can cause me to lose is me. I got to look at me and what my beliefs are and my waffling or wavering beliefs in myself, in what's going on, in Manatech. Those are things, number one on my list, absolute. And I believe it's true for all of us. And I'm not sure we'd like to always do that because we don't like to point the fingers at ourselves. But that's number one in terms of a factor that's going to cause me, because I know if I'm going to win, it's going to be also caused by me. I need to be the one, the creator. And I can be also be the destroyer. That's how much power we have within. So then I looked at other things that can cause me to lose, and most of them were focused on me. All of them were factors about me. you know, time commitment strategy, that kind of stuff. If my story's not good enough, if I'm not well enough prepared, if I'm not, you know, these kind of things. How am I showing up today in a different way than I showed up, you know, 10 years ago? And what do I, where do I need to shift? That was really a powerful exercise for me as the negative strategics, right? All right, so definitely go through that to see where you are, your strategic negatives. And then exercise 13 was developing your strategic plan. And this was, I went backwards and forwards on this one. This is so critical, and I'm still working on it. But I started off with strategies, and then I got into objectives, and I found out really what I'd put in the strategies were the objectives, and I had to go back and develop the strategies, because strategies are a bigger picture. Strategies really come from, you know, who you must become along the way as you cross the gap to your vision. You know, strategies are about, you know, what am I becoming? What is my process? And it's an overwhelming look, a bigger view than objectives, right? An objective would be something like developing things or, you know, building a system, making sure that the system is communicated properly. Things like that are more objectives. But strategies are overall strategy. And it's about what happens to us, the value creation and value enhancement. That's going to help with long-term sustainability of my competitive edge, my ability to compete in the marketplace with other people who are doing direct sales. And that doesn't mean I get into the difference between us and Juice Plus or USANA or whatever else. It means what am I shaping in terms of providing people value? And we're going to talk a little bit more about that today. And then specific actions. And the specific actions, of course, in your strategic plan, should be your what? Your high leverage actions. I mean, you want to look at the high top leverage actions. What are you getting the most dime, you know, dollar for your time? That's what you're going to look at. What's most important? And what's most important in network marketing is prospecting on a daily basis, making a commitment to prospecting. It's the most important thing you can ever do in network marketing is prospecting. And then you look at the four pillars of network marketing. Make sure that you're educating yourself, you're pouring yourself time and education into your own self-development, right? That's very important. So you need a self-development book booked into your actions. And, you know, you look at, you know, kind of those four elements, and we'll talk about those today a little bit that go into network marketing, and how are you allocating in that. And then systematizing your follow-up, making sure that you've got a system. You know, it's important that you consistently make contributions, holding meetings. I'm doing now in-home workshops. We scheduled our first one around the Navigate system. It's going to be the Tuesday after Christmas. So we're starting to do Navigate in-home workshops, which is super. I'm enjoying that part of it and learning the system and putting energy behind that. But all of that is actions that help support my objectives I have in mind, which are consistent with the strategies outlined, right? And that's what your strategic plan becomes. And again, I'm still working on mine, so I know it's not something that you instantaneously come up with, but you've got a couple weeks here, and I think never a greater time than the kicking off a new year to have those things outlined, up and running, and in great shape for you so you can be your absolute best as you hit 2012, because we want to get the best possible results out of our next year, and that's what you want to do. To get clarity, focus, and execution is critical. And those exercises were all about focus and getting really clear and being in focus with what's most important. All right, so today, do we have any feedback? Anyone else doing the exercises want to give some feedback on their experience around them? Okay, like I said, what you want to do is you want to work with your people as well, like I am. Once you get started in them, definitely work with the people that are in your organization, because there's a lot of insight that you can glean from them as well as give to them in response. It's a give and take. It's a sharing concept, and we all have different outlooks on this, but great work and great continuous work. This is something that's not just start and stop in 1 hour. It's something that we spend time and energy in and make happen for ourselves, because it's going to set you on a straight path for 2012, and that's what's most important, to be on the right foot, on the right path. The third element of Tony Geary's book, of course, is what we call execution. And clarity, focus, and execution, they're all equally important. So don't get the idea that one's greater than the other. But if one is lacking, it's just like a three-legged stool, you're going to be out of balance. And you're not going to be able to support yourself. You're not going to be able to support your organization. You're not going to be able to support your growth and where you're going in this business. So the important thing is to look at it. I need to be dedicating time and energy to all three of these, and they need to carry equal importance. Execution, however, is where you're going to be spending most of your time. Why? Because that's the doing part of it. That's the action steps, and that's what we're about is action. Clarity is, again, reviewing that, what you really want, and understanding the purpose and value of your vision. Focus is avoiding distractions and learning to identify high-leverage activities that significantly move your results needle so you know what's going to make a difference in my life. Boom. I know the activities I need to do in order to be productive and not most highly productive and create the greatest results. And, again, they build together, build the basis for execution, because once you know your high-leverage activities and you only get to through clarity and focus, now you have to take action. And action inevitably requires people to do what? People around you to buy into you, because otherwise you're a solo flight all your life. And that's not how we operate in the business world, and it clearly is not how we operate in network marketing. In fact, he said in his book that most people, when you talk about persuasion and spending time with it, most people, and persuasion is the first leg, they build a tripod around execution too. And the first leg of execution is persuasion. That persuasion matters. And his premise was that most of us spend more than 50% of our time involved in persuasion or influencing others on a daily basis. And that's true about all the hats we wear, whether you look at a parent or a spouse or, I mean, some of us spend half of our day just persuading our spouse to do the things we want them to do, right? And I'm not talking about manipulation, I'm talking about persuasion. There's a big difference between the two. But we spend time persuading people and having impact on people. I call persuasion more or less a concept of presenting the best possible side so people see a better direction in life, and thus you impact their lives. And that's what I call persuasion. And so we're all in the business of persuasion, no matter what business we're actually in. If we're in direct sales or selling, I'm convinced that we even spend a higher percentage, maybe 75 to 80%, because our whole job is around the concept of persuasion or out there marketing. And the big difference with persuasion, if you really want to make a difference in persuasion, the number one way to do that, according to Tony Jerry in his chapters on talking about, the importance of persuasion and that persuasion matters, is to provide people with a concept of exceeding their expectations. Exceed expectations of people, and that makes all the difference in the world. That will be your number one way of really having an impact in terms of persuading people. And he gave an example. He went on for about 2.5 pages. First of all, let me give you the principle he espoused here. He says the expectations we exceed today become the seed for new opportunities in the future. I think that's a great quote. The expectations we exceed today become the seed for new opportunities in the future. Excellent quote. But then he talked about Howard Schultz, who was the CEO of Starbucks. And, you know, when he created Starbucks, he didn't just create a coffee shop, did he? No. In fact, from day one, Howard Schultz had a commitment to exceed expectations. And that was permeated through everything that Starbucks does, from how it makes its coffee, the layout of the stores, every single aspect of it. He said he wanted to exceed customer expectations first and foremost. His concept was that he wanted to call Starbucks a third place. And what does a third place mean? Starbucks worked to create a place people thought of going to that was third only to their homes and their workplaces. In other words, you're going to sleep at home, you're going to eat at home, you're going to have weekends at home, you're going to go to work every day, 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, whatever that might look like for you. And for us home-based business, that's more home. But for us, it would be a second place, right? But your third highest number of hours would be spent at Starbucks. That was his goal. And that concept is that he wanted his customers to frequent there as much as possible. And in its early years of Starbucks, you know, and I'm not sure where they are today, but this is a story about Schultz. but he said that its regular customers will frequent one of its stores a staggering 18 times each month. That's unbelievable. Some of you know that because you can't go any day without getting your latte or your frappe or whatever, venti or whatever it is. I mean, I don't drink coffee, so I don't get into all that stuff, but I do like their passion tea. So whenever I go to Starbucks to have meetings with people, which is mostly what I use Starbucks for, as a place to meet, it's a great place to do a presentation for somebody to meet people or do a two-on-one or whatever. And I've done it over and over and over again very effectively. I love that location. And it's a great, you know, it's like a non-threatening location. But I always have passion tea. That's my favorite when I go there. But it's and he talked about it. It wasn't just an expectation he had with his customers. It was also an expectation with his employees. So when most people apply for a job in a small retail food business, they can't expect, you know, health care or, pregnancy leave, all the things that, and he said, and stock options and all that kind of stuff. But that's what Schultz did. When he moved in, he said he wants his employees, they want, you know, stock options, health benefits, everything. In fact, he claims to be paying more in health care than he does for coffee beans, but that's also somewhat true of many companies because health care costs are so huge. But he went above and beyond. So his exceeding expectations wasn't just about exceeding expectations about his associates or his clients. It was also about his employees. For us, what would that look like? It would look like we're exceeding expectations, not just with the brand new people that we're working with and what we have to share with them and our dedication to get them started, but also once we get our associates started, how are we exceeding their expectations? How much contribution are we putting into their life to give them as much as they need to be successful in their life? That's a good question you need to ask yourself, and only you can answer. So it's about always what, and then we have customer base as well. What are you doing for your customers out there? Are you doing? Are you touching their hearts every month? Are you keeping them on track so they keep educated? Are you stepping up to the plate to be in contact? He said, one of the quotes he put in here, but the job of every retailer and every merchant is to put yourself in the shoes of the customer and ask yourself, are you exceeding their expectations? That's what we have to do as a business. So, again, exceeding expectations, so critical. And exercise 15 for next week, or to conclude this session, we'll talk about it next week in the open meeting that I do sometime next week around the exercises. 15 is to understand exceeding expectations. So, and he says everybody is capable of exceeding expectations. Everybody's capable of it because we all have a mind and we're all capable of tapping into that mind of being very powerful. So the idea is with that powerful mind, what do we need to do? We need to take that powerful mind and we need to focus on what? Creating exceeding expectations of people. That's what we need to do. And his comment, and I didn't put quotes around it, but he said, let me see, I did the quote on page 135. That was our quote about expectations we exceed today become the seed for new opportunities in the future. But he also said acceptable performance is mediocrity. Acceptable performance. And I'll never forget when Lydia started working for me, you know, it was like I kept asking her, I said, so what are you doing? And I said, so what did you feel like you did about that project? She said, well, I got it done. And I go, so you got it done. And for you, getting it done is enough. And we had some intriguing conversations about getting it done. Right? I mean, the idea about just completion. And it really was inadequate. It was, everything you do, I tried to enforce with her from day one because she came from that background of just getting by. And it was so discouraging to me because how many of us get stuck in that just getting by? I just want to do it to get it done. And how does that play out in your life? Is it working for you? I'm going to suggest it'll never work for you because it's choosing mediocrity. It's choosing just to get enough done to get by. And never should you, everything you take on, you should take on like you're an artisan, like you're, you know, a creator, like you're an artist that's creating the best possible results. And that's what he's talking about, exceeding expectations. So we're all capable of doing it, whether we choose to do it or not, is another story. The only thing he says, every human being is capable of producing excellence because every human being is capable of exceeding expectations. So he ties them direct. To produce excellence, you must exceed expectations. The only thing that has to happen to regularly produce excellence is to become willing to regularly exceed expectations. And that's not something a lot of people do. His other quote in the same chapter was, an essential function of leadership is to persuade and motivate others to pursue excellence by helping them become willing to exceed expectations. So if people come to you as a leader and they're looking at trying to exceed, you know, to produce excellence in their life, are you capable of teaching them how to exceed expectations if you don't do it yourself? Very good question. Anyway, most successful people can effectively convince and persuade other people to take action on their behalf. That's just part of life. It's called persuasion. They do it by knowing what they want to say and how they want to say it. So we have to have an idea of what we're going to say and how we're going to say it. And they can say it in a way that impacts others and spurs them to take action. So now we're talking about effective communication, right? And he basically outlined three elements of effective communication. Communication at the belief level and explaining the why. And we've talked about that many times in our business about explaining the why. It's important. Why is communicated by explaining value and purpose, the very items you so diligently pursued in the process of gaining clarity about your vision. The same characteristic that caused you to believe in your vision will cause others to believe in it as well. So communicate the why to create the buy-in, right? And we can all do that. We can go back to our why and create that. Remember, that's one of the things that we talked about when Amanda did her introduction, Amanda out of Canada. When she calls, so she gets her contact list together, and she calls people, she has three basic questions. The first one is the why. Why am I involved? Getting authentic, digging into the depth of why I got committed to this. Because communicating the why creates a buy-in. And that's why. That's why it's so persuasive. The second step, she said, is why am I calling you? So it's about honoring the other person. And then the third step for Amanda was what expectation you can have as a benefit. What benefits are you going to find out of being involved in Manatech? And those are the three steps she had it. And when I went through this, I said, man, this is Amanda at her best right here. It really talks about that exact thing, is communicating from the why, to communicate the belief level, explain your why. That's going to help others and be more powerful to lead them to create buy-in with you. The second step is set a powerful example by your own behavior. Of course, we have to live and die by what we believe in. If we don't, we're just going to die. Our belief in, we're going to be selling our belief in to other people all the time. So you got to be able to walk the walk. It's that whole thing. And I love the quote they put in there, and it's a quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson. And he said, what you do speaks so loud, I can't hear what you say. And that's a great analysis to look like. And we're going to get into that a little further when we get into the last part of this chapter, which is presence in terms of values. But it's important for us to get that. What you do speaks so loud, I can't hear what you say. So you can't be two different things at the same time. What you do is going to be a reflection of who you are, and you can't convince anyone otherwise because you set a powerful example by your own behavior. And the third step on this communication or persuasion element is demonstrate confidence in what you say and do. In other words, when you're out there trying to get a group together, herding cats, as we call it, we can't just go out there and be wishy-washy and always think, well, I want to be humble in this situation. Confidence is crucial because confidence produces a certain level of certainty for other people. When you lack confidence, no one's going to buy into you. There's going to be no buy-in, especially if they have issues or concerns about things. And you come across without confidence. So we need to have that strength and that confidence. We know what we're talking about. We love Manatech. We love the product. We've seen remarkable results. We love the Give for Real program. We can help save this world. We can make a huge difference in a major social issue that really won't be tackled unless we step up, because otherwise it would have been tackled before. Why isn't it happening already? We've been feeding these kids this, you know, enriched cereal-based grains junk for years, and we still haven't given them the value they need for basic nutritional needs on a daily basis. So, you know, you got to be confident. Talk from confidence. All right, so those are the three. That gets done with persuasion. Huge. Persuasion is critically important, right? Everybody understand that. Critically important, because we spend so much of our time in it. So persuasion matters in terms of execution. Number two, production before perfection. And this is a great concept that he develops in his book, and I want to share it with you because I think it can serve a lot of us. Production is defined as completing tasks and projects in reduced time frames. So it's about efficiency. Production is efficiency, right? Of the things that you can actually control about your production, one habit has more impact on delaying results than any other. And what is that habit? It's called the habit of procrastination. It's a big P word. And a lot of us can sit back and say, well, I get that one, Mary Jo, because I know a lot of it exists out there. We all suffer from it. In fact, there's a great article I used to give out in my pathway class about procrastination. And I remember I would read it with a class every year. And inevitably, I thought I was the most disciplined, structured. I always got things done. Inevitably, I'd find something that I put on the back burner. And why don't we see them every day? Because we want to get them out of our heads. We don't want to address them. They're issues that are painful. Maybe they're issues we don't know how to resolve. They're also, and so we dump them somewhere so we don't have to grapple with them, because they cause us some level of depression. And we know, why do we want to be depressed? I agree with that. But I also don't want to run away from reality. So with that, we can establish that all of us are guilty of procrastination. And he says there's two kinds of procrastination. Positive procrastination, that's when you legitimately need some mental percolation and time to gather your thoughts before you can get clear on what you need to do. And that happens to all of us. All of us have times when we're just not clear. So we have to develop that and get that clarity. But the problem is we use this as an excuse all too frequent, because it's really a negative procrastination we're involved in. This is based on some pretty flimsy excuses to avoid doing something, which can ultimately affect your results in negative ways, like prospecting. We use flimsy excuses why we're not out there prospecting. We use flimsy excuses why we didn't talk to the person in the hotel we saw last week. We use flimsy excuses why we didn't share with the mailman when we went out to get the mail and we happened to bump into him, right? This is our way of protection. We choose protection, and it's procrastination in a gigantic way. He calls that negative procrastination one of the toughest, most difficult things. So he developed a concept called production before perfection. What it is it's the principle of going as far as you can see and then being able to see farther, and that's basically the justification of PBP. PBP is a catalyst for great results as well as the solution to negative. And let me give you that meaning. PBP means you start doing things immediately, regardless of what you think you need to make them perfect. So it's production before perfection. And recognize, people, there are 90% of the people out there that won't get this because they're going, oh, man, I got to deal with perfection first. I have to know exactly how it's going to happen. It's kind of like that intent plus mechanism equals results. A lot of people can't put an intent out there until they know what the mechanism is going to be. And they would look at me and go, Mary Jo, well, how can you do that? How can you intend to win an incentive and you don't even know what the mechanism is going to be? I said, because I know I'm going to win. No matter what the mechanisms are, I'm going to win. And remember, the intent was 100% of that formula, intent plus mechanism equals result, because as soon as you put your intent out there, it's amazing what the universe attracts to you in terms of ways of getting it done. So we have to move forward. We need to PBP, doing things immediately regardless of what you think will make them perfect. So we're not worried about mechanism and all the other things. We got to start moving forward. And the principle is, again, as you start moving forward and you start moving as far as you can see, so you can go, well, I don't know what's going to happen after this. And you go, so what? Move to that. The faster you move to that, the more clarity you're going to have on what the next step's going to be. So it's important for us to just take action, and a lot of people have a hard time doing that. But it's important that we do it, and it takes time sometimes to get people to jump on board with you when you're trying to take action. In Tony's book, he talks about Nemo, Finding Nemo, that book. And near the end of the book, when the son and the father are united, Dory is suddenly swept up with hundreds of other fish in a big trawling net. Some of you might remember this in Nemo, Finding Nemo. Although Dory is too large to swim through the net, Nemo is able to join her and the other fish, and he attempts to tell them what to do in order to free themselves. He's telling them, he says, push, swim down. We can get everybody in the whole net to swim down at the same time. We'll cause so much force. But it was very hard, because all the other fish were like, they were panicking. And that's what happens in our world. We panic and we do only that what we know to do. And finally, after, through chaos and panic, eventually the fish began to listen because they saw they had no hope in what their resolution was. And they started swimming downstream, right? And that broke the, and allowed the pressure, took the pressure off the net, and it broke the winch up above, and all the fish were freed. But it took Nemo to really be, you know, exacting about this and taking action. He couldn't see all the results, and none of us can see all the results. We just see as far as we can see. And we take on, see as far as we can see. And that's what we do. We take action based on that. Because we know it's good enough, that action's going to be good enough because we're being as great as we can be as far as we can see. And as soon as we start acting, some further sight will be directed to us. We'll get some more insight into what is the next step. And so PBB is critically important to avoid procrastination, because your justifications you'll come up with will be mighty. You've been doing it for many, many years, and it's time to stop. Otherwise, you'll choke yourself and your dreams and your future instead of choking out procrastination. He made a mention about a lot of his clients being in the direct sales industry, and he said building any such business as an associate requires certain basic things. A base of customers must be built. A network of associates must be created. Product expertise and knowledge must be acquired. And basic skills, sales skills, must be learned. Well, I went in there and I said, wow, these are four critical things. If we focus on these things, we could start taking action. And he said, those who fail to put these basic pieces in place. That's what happens in network marketing. One or two or three of those are just something you're not putting in place. For a lot, it's some people just bypass getting sales skills, or they bypass product expertise and knowledge, or some of us hang out in product expertise and knowledge until the cows come home. So we're stuck because we don't take action. We use that I don't know enough about products to be our procrastination tool. But all four of those things are crucial for us. And what he writes in the book, he says, identifying those four factors exposes a number of things, opportunities, shortcomings, and high-leverage activities on which to focus. Focusing on the high-leverage activities is a starting point for going as far as you can see and the key to success. So, again, we have to have clarity around what. What are the high-leverage activities to starting up that business? And that's so crucial. Identifying the foundations of procrastination. Exercise 16, did I have that here? Yeah. He's going to guide you in answering a bunch of these questions. It's called the MOLO matrix. And what is working well, what is not, and you're pursuing your vision, it goes on and on. So you'll have some great questions to answer in that one. But identifying the foundations of procrastination, that there are four basic concepts in the procrastination realm. When you start looking at procrastination, that four basic excuses that we use in procrastination, and I want to run through five. I can do it tomorrow. Some of us use that. I can do this tomorrow. Why do today what I can put off for tomorrow? Oh, that just nauseates me and gives me the heebie-jeebies. But if that's normal language for you, I want you to just mark there, circle that, get your highlighter out. There you are, showing up. Not the way you want to show up, because it's not going to be very effective. I don't have everything I need, so I will wait. Well, why don't you start taking action? Again, the whole concept of PBP means what? Production before perfection. I don't need to have everything before I start, so let's get started and the rest will come. I can't do it perfectly, so I'll wait. Trust me, you can't do anything perfectly. Perfection is a great, you know, charge for all of us, or direction for all of us, or desire for all of us, but that's not what life is about, is being perfect about everything. I don't have time right now. And I'm going to tell you, there's no such thing to not having time right now. Time is one of the greatest procrastinators in the world. Well, all that people say to them when they don't have time right now is they say it's not a priority, because everybody has time. We have time to do whatever we want to do in our lives. It's just a matter of whether it's a priority or not. So I have that question, you know, when people say, oh, Mary Jo, I don't want to make a decision around Christmas, why don't you, you know, I just am so busy with these things. And I go, well, are you committed or not? So you want to still pin them down. Are you committed? Well, then let's set an appointment after Christmas hours, because I don't want this to burn you or burn my head if there's not some level of commitment that you have towards moving forward, right? So ask them. Some of you let them get off the hook so easy, and then you don't even book an appointment after the holidays are over. I'm going to suggest you lose and you lose and they lose in that scenario, because then you second-guess yourself all the way to the bank. You have no idea whether they're in or interested or not interested. Find out. Get clarity for it. So don't worry about being perfect. Don't say you don't have time. And the last one, number five, is someone else can do it better. I've heard that a lot. That's people are insecure. Most of the time when you come up with ideas, because you're the one that formed the idea, you're probably the best person to get it done. But let me ask you a simple question. Is there always going to be somebody who could do it better? Absolutely. Unless you're like the best of the best. And I don't think any of us are the best of the best of anything. Because there are other talents out there, and it's awesome that other people have phenomenal talents. It's a greatness out there that we have a country and a world full of incredible talents. So that's okay that somebody else can do it better. It doesn't mean that you procrastinate and don't do it, because you have no control over when that other person is going to do it. Okay? And then exercise 16 we talked about earlier. So make sure to take on that one, because that's going to be very helpful for you. Finally, the third leg of the execution tripod is presence. And this was very, very good. Presence, to be most persuasive in working with others and creating change, you must understand how others perceive you, which will help you communicate more effectively. The perception people have of you is going to be determining a lot of the decisions they make regarding you. So what is it about the perception that you're putting out there? And how important is it for you to really understand it? To be most persuasive and create voluntary change in people, you must understand how others perceive you, which will help you communicate more effectively. Everybody agree? Absolutely. A great statement. To be most persuasive and create voluntary change, you must understand how others perceive you, which will help you communicate more effectively. So everybody that you've ever worked with has some kind of impression of you. And one of the exercises is going to be to dig through that, you know, so that's going to be a fun exercise for you to do. It's called a persona identifying presence, and it defines their total perceptions others have about you. We create both positive and negative strategic presences all the time. The positive presence is what creates voluntary cooperation versus the negative that triggers resistance. So remember, our goal is to get voluntary cooperation or voluntary what? Change. Get people to make voluntary changes in their lives. And if we're going to have that impact on people, we need to what? Have a positive strategic presence, not a negative one. So but every day of our life, we're creating positive and negative strategic presences, as he puts it. The positive presence is what creates for us the results, i.e. the voluntary change, the voluntary cooperation. So what's important for us is creating an authentic, positive strategic presence. In order to execute our vision, we need to create an authentic, positive strategic presence. Why do we not just let our strategic presence be what it is? Because you say, I just am who I am, Mary Jo. I'm just going to be out there. And that's my tendency. I sometimes do that. Because, you know, every once in a while you'll hear people, I am being misunderstood. Or if you ask people, the feedback arc was so excellent in Clemmer work, because I got some feedback that was amazing to me. People told me things about me that I couldn't ever believe in a million years. They were so contrary to who I was. Well, why was that? Because I was putting out a different strategic presence than what I thought I was. I was putting out a negative instead of a positive one. So I needed to make a shift. But if I didn't get the feedback, I would never know how to shift. So the understanding that people have of you, you want to make sure that you're getting the positive feedback from people and you're putting out positive strategic presence. And like I said in here, feedback is absolutely essential. Two strategic issues are most responsible for creating the other's person, for the persona that establishes your strategic presence in the minds of others. And those two things are your values and your behavior. Now let's jump into values for a minute. You know, a lot of you have been through my core value exercises that I've did in the past with Pathway to Presidential. But value is really important because value isn't what you say your values are. How many times have you come across people that say, well, these are my values, and they outline these great values, you know, integrity, honor, discipline, love, structure, contribution, service, servant's heart, they have all these things. And then you go out there and you watch them for a couple of days, and you see no visible sign of those values. What do you know that you know about the person? You know that they like to espouse something, because we all want to be something greater than we are, right? That's why we work on ourselves all the time. But some of us live lies. We believe we're these values, but when we look at our human behavior, doesn't exist. So we need to constantly be practicing those values, be aware of your values, being able to state them is important. That's why I changed our to-do list to a to-do/to-be list. That we constantly work on the beingness of ourselves so that we acknowledge it. And you should keep handy with you, what are your five most important core values? Am I living them, breathing them every day? Or am I just espousing them and saying them? Okay, so values are important. What are your core values? What are so most important to you? And, you know, mine are recognizable in everything I do every day, all day long. But every once in a while, I might get off track, so I have to look back and I have to make sure that I've got my core values in alignment. And the beautiful thing about finding those core values is that when people present you with different things to do, you right away see how they're off base. If they don't fit and they don't fit within what you view your core values are, what happens is you get to readily dismiss them instead of be distracted by them. And that's critically important for us. So the core values are real big. And then behavior is the other one. Five categories of actions that have significant influence on people. And you have to look at yourself from all these five. Work ethic, the most visible elements are things that you do to impact the time and effort of others, like being on time for meetings, keeping appointments. I mean, you know, that shows a lot about you. Some of you never attributed that to the concept of work ethic, but that is a behavioral part of work ethic. Integrity, because it impacts others, and that's how they get that persona developed about you. They get a negative strategic presence. That's what they view of you, a negative. You're promoting a negative strategic presence. Integrity, keeping your word, communicating honestly, and doing what you say you're going to do, even if it hurts. So it doesn't matter the pain that you go through, you stick to your word. Judgment, in other words, having judgment. When you're in environments, making sure that you're taking into account the needs and the safety of other people. Level-headed, realistic, this is what we're talking about, judgment. Instead of being self-centered, self-focused. Courage is another one. Evidence when others see how you handle adversity. How courageous are you? That's huge. And then willingness to help others. If you want others to help you, you must be willing to help others. So that doesn't mean you do it as a quid pro quo. Wrong. Zero that idea out. This is just a concept of creating space. You know, it's like if you want to be loved, you need to do what? Love others. If you want people to help you, you need to do what? You need to step into other people's life. But you do it with a willingness that you have no expectation of anything coming back. It's because it's the right thing to do. It's called servant's heart, and that's what's important. How to communicate strategically, we can delve into that because it's important for us to communicate strategically with people. We don't want to be out there The quote that he had in there was, the objective of strategic communication is to achieve a specific result with those you hope to persuade. Your messaging must meet one or more of these standards to be effective. Your communication must impact others' beliefs. So you want to come from authenticity all the time, telling the truth, demonstrating commitment to what you do, by what you do, and be real about your motive. Number two, you must communicate vision, strength, and opportunity. Those are crucial things that you need to communicate to help persuade people. That's going to be a strategic communication skill. Your vision, strength, confidence in people, you know, instill confidence in people and opportunities. What is in it for them if they successfully follow the strategies? Again, give them the concept of what the opportunities are. And then finally, you must communicate value, not your personal values, but rather the real value of your vision and your enterprise. You are best to communicate relevant value to others when you understand their felt needs. So how does their need fulfillment in here? So communicating value is about need fulfillment, right? So the last exercises in the books are 17, 18, and 19, and they will help you regarding your vision statement and your presence in a big way. And I think it's super important for us to understand the critical nature of this. I know for myself, I looked at, when I first read this material, I was thinking to myself about how careless I am. How careless I am in my presence. At times, I let things happen and I just don't think there's not much importance to them, instead of being very particular about what my presence is, very particular about my communication, making sure I'm being a great listener, you know, really focusing on where my needs are to be the best I can be, and maybe taking more time in doing a presentation and putting more energy and effort behind it so it's the best it possibly can be instead of just adequate. Because remember, acceptable performance is mediocrity. And this is not about mediocrity. This is about strategic acceleration. It's about being the best you can be, being in your best, communicating the best, most effectively, so that you can have the highest and best persuasive power in people's lives. This last aspect about persuasion, this whole thing about execution, is really about what we do in network marketing. It's the gist of everything we do every day, because we're in a persuasion mode all the time. So are we putting out a negative strategic presence or a positive strategic presence? And it's not just about the people we're prospecting. It's about the people that we've already signed up. It's about the consumers that we have. It's about the interactions we have with people in our lives. So let's take on a new look. So this execution section is absolutely huge, huge for us in network marketing, huge for us in every aspect of our life. But I'm building this around this last 4 weeks to help you guys have the best 2012 you can have. So we need to understand what that execution looks like for us and what we need to be putting into it to create the best possible results. Okay, so that's your homework. Then what? We have a lot of exercises, 14 through 19, okay? And Lydia attached all of them to the outline, so you have them there. So, you know, try to find time to do that over the next week to 10 days. I will schedule a call next week to just talk about this whole experience about strategic acceleration and answer people's questions. So if you get stuck and you have questions, write those down, highlight them, and come into that call with questions that you have. And when I post the call for all of you and send the email out, I don't want you to wait and do these exercises 1 hour before the call takes place, because then you're not going to get the true value of it. You'll come up with lots of questions about them for sure, but I want you to be a thinker. I want you to really delve into these and see what they do for you. I mean, really spend some time with them, because I'm working on them every day. I mean, they're sitting on my desk every day, because I know that I still lack clarity in what I'm looking at and how I'm feeling about my response to them. So it's important for me to continue to work on me, because I don't think I'm getting to the depth. I'm not digging deep enough sometimes in my responses or getting the clarity of what it really needs to look like. Okay? And I will share with you some of those responses I have as well. We'll walk through some of those to share each other's results, so that it can help build for everybody that's on the call what needs to happen for you. All right, everybody. Love you all. Have a great week. Merry Christmas to all of you. Happy holidays. Have a wonderful time with family and friends. If you're out there and you're saying, wow, I don't have anything to do, I don't have anywhere to go, call somebody. I mean, just put forth the effort. I would love to open my house up to tons of people, because that's what it's about. So invite people. And if you know people that are alone during these holidays, give them a call. Touch their lives. Call them up. Maybe a great time to contact some of your old Manitechers that maybe aren't even doing the business anymore or buying the products, and just say, you know what, I was just thinking about you because I remember the Christmas we had 5 years ago. I'm wondering what you're doing for the holidays. Are you available? Can you come over? We'd love to spend some time. Just love on people. It's amazing. It's amazing how effective that is. It's probably the reason why God is love, right? There you go. Amen to that. Okay, everybody, love you all. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Have a great one. Don't forget the end of the business period. Get your exercises done so we can have phenomenal acceleration come 2012. And I'll give you a note probably end of this week or early next week on when that time is, scheduled call that I'll just put out there for everybody to be able to participate, to be able to talk through their exercise experiences and any questions you have. All right, love you all. Bye-bye now.